You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There we go. Straight in, guys. Hey, recording. How are we doing? Are you excited about this one?
Yeah, very
buzzy,
mate.
Yeah, a bit of a bonus for our audience. Do you know what I mean? And you were very well received, Jacob. You were very well received.
Oh, that's nice. That's good to hear.
Yeah, it's always good to be well received, isn't it? No matter what you're doing. If you're just
well received,
it's great. It's great. So well done on that. Shall we jump into it then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to yet another Arsenal Opinion podcast. And you guys, you're really, really, this is like a Christmas gift come early. It's a bonus one because we've gone and got Mr. Jacob Hawley in. He's here. He's ready to talk Arsenal. He's ready to offer so many wonderful opinions and illuminate your lives, people. So lucky to you. Also, man like Matt Candela. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, just surviving this Christmas period, right, isn't it? It's like that week before where every day you wake up and you're like, I feel absolutely terrible. and you're like, well, we've still got more days to go.
We were just talking before we hit record, Jacob, about the plight of having, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a blessing having young children, but there's also a hell of a lot of plight to it. And we're constantly stricken, me and you. How are you surviving the early Christmas period?
Yeah, all right. As you say, constantly poorly. Also sort of, like you say, Matt, I feel in absolutely dreadful health. And I can't think why, as I prepare another 10 o'clock cheese board and three glasses of red wine before bed every single night. I don't know about you. I just sort of, in the month of December, I just sort of concede the fact that I'm just going to be a functioning alcoholic and I'm going to have the same diet as Henry VIII. Just sort of slowly pushing myself to gout by the time we get to January.
I was going to say, trying to get rid of gout. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then try some mad veganuary health kit, because if that fixes it all, when I would have been better off just eating as I normally do for 2 months.
Boom and bust. I couldn't agree more.
I had about 8 Negronis and then I'm like, oh, I'll just have a glass of Athletic Greens in the morning and then that will be absolutely fine. I'll be back to full health.
Yeah. You know what? It might actually be a decent setup there, Matt. Athletic Greens, very good. We can't say that it will cure hangovers because we don't want to be called up for any litigious promises that we made. But the reality is it does make you feel better. So well done.
It does make you feel better.
Right, we know how we start by now, guys. Why are we waiting on the count? Simple as this. We've got to get into. Where are you? Oh, it's not even seamless. That's a shame.
Hottest of takes.
The AOP, hottest of takes. Make it spicy.
Yes, Jacob, you know how it works by now, okay? It's the hottest of takes. What have you got for us?
I was so impressed with Gabriel Jesus last Saturday, and I have been for the last few weeks, that I honestly believe there is maybe only one striker in world football we could get who would probably improve us. And I think it's Kylian Mbappe. And I genuinely, in terms of who we could get, and I'm not saying that's a realistic get, I watch Jesus when he's fit and when he's actually on the pitch. I really can't see many out there that would make us a better team than he does as a number nine. I really can't. Obviously, Haaland's one. We're never going to get Haaland off City. The names we've been linked to over the last sort of couple of weeks, I'd love Ivan Toney as a rotation option. I don't think he gets in the team ahead of Jesus. Dominic Solanke feels a bit underwhelming, doesn't it? Dominic Solanke rumours. Ollie Watkins, I don't think you get him out of Villa. I think if you're going to try and upgrade that forward line, there's one player in world football who properly does it without debate. And anyone else who I think you could throw into that conversation, there's fair debate around whether they actually make us better or not.
Wow, that is hot. That is red roasting. That really is. Interesting. All right, Matt, where are you going with hottest takes?
I think I'm going to go and look at our away form against big rivals. And my hottest of takes is I think it's sort of gone a little bit under the radar, how, because we've obviously had a great season and last year was a great season. And it felt like we've semi-turned the corner because we had some good wins. But we're still missing a trick when it comes to getting away results at our big rivals. Like we got one at Chelsea last season, but that was Chelsea. Spurs last season, but it's Spurs. When it comes down to it, Newcastle, the title had sort of gone. When it comes down to it, we've been unable to get any results when it really matters at Manchester City, or any results whatsoever at Manchester City, at Liverpool, and Manchester United, the three sort of biggest clubs, grounds, atmospheres. And so we are going to need to fix that if we're going to win the league. And I think that that is why this weekend's game is so important. If we can get a result, then I think we can go on and really do something. But if we end up the end of the calendar year, no matter what our performance, having lost at Villa, lost at Newcastle, and lost at Liverpool, I don't believe that we can go on and win the Premier League this season. So this is a huge, huge test for us.
Oh, yes, Matt, I think you're right there. And I'm going to stick to that similar theme for my hottest of takes. And where I would probably go with it is, I think when you look at a league campaign, they are like an organism. They change and shift throughout. There's a dynamism to it as it goes on. Different storylines unravel. And most of it comes back to the old adage, isn't it? Like, you can't win it right now, but you can lose it. That kind of thing. Now, I would kind of spin that in a way of, at this stage, halfway through the season, if you lose at Anfield, you've not lost the league. But what we're moving into is the first time where you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to strike the first blow. And there will be several opportunities throughout the season. If we miss Anfield, there would be another one like going to the Etihad and winning. And you've got to take these opportunities because at some point you'll sit back and you'll be out of opportunities. And that's how you don't win a league. These opportunities, they don't come around all the time. The reason why we've all got goosebumps is we all know that this is a massive opportunity. And another little interesting tidbit is if we beat Liverpool, we will be 1 point better off based on the reverse fixtures from last year.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we, you know, for all of that, all we've been stopping and starting, if we can beat Liverpool at Anfield and be 1 point better off than last season, which we thought was the best start to a season we've seen in the modern era, it would really feel like a seminal moment. So my hottest of takes is this is the first big opportunity to strike a major blow in the title race this year.
Oh,
so there we go. That was a bit hot, wasn't it?
That was spicy. That was spicy. What do you think of Jacobs? Because we've been talking a lot about Ivan Toney. Yeah. And I think what we know, and I feel like the problem with Gabby Jesus isn't when Gabby Jesus is fit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the problem with Gabby Jesus is he's never fit. And it's like, it's a bit like all those Chelsea fans who say Reece James is the best right back in the league. And we all laugh because it's like, well, how can you be the best right back in the league when you play four league games a season?
And Gabby, he basically works from home, doesn't he, Reece James? He's trying a sort of furlough way of becoming a club captain. I think I'm a bit of a defender of Jesus. And I look at the time he's been with us. It's not that long. It's obviously, you know, only about 14, 15 months that he's been at the club. In that time, it's been that one big knee injury that he's had. Obviously, the recovery and the extra operation he had to have before the season started this year. Then he pulled a hamstring a month ago, as Martinelli has. All over the league, players are pulling hamstrings. So I don't know if I'm ready to sort of stick a sticker on him and say he's injury prone just yet. But then you look at the amount of games that he would start for Manchester City before coming to us, it was rarely more than 30 in the Premier League. And I think that's the concern, isn't it? It's that it's not as if we saw him at his previous club be a 38 game a season player. It's that consistency, getting him on the pitch. I feel like we spent the first kind of 10, 11, 12 games of the season talking about, is our attack clicking? And in the last 5 weeks, since he's been starting as a number nine, we're not really having that conversation anymore, are we? We're making 15, 20, 25 attempts on goal each game. And we look like the team that I want us to be when he plays as number nine for us.
We are.
Yeah,
we are.
I mean, my thing is, when you first started saying your hottest of takes, I was like, where's he going with this? Like, not strikers we could get. I was like, you know, pretty sure Haaland would improve us, you know, and that. But I understand you meant players that we could realistically get.
That we could actually go for. And it doesn't feel that realistic to go for Mbappe. But then, look, he's out of contract in the summer. Madrid are potentially not looking anymore. Yeah. And my thing is, who else? Like, who else? Where does he go?
I think Mbappe is realistic. I really do. I'm not saying it will happen.
If he said no to the Middle East, if he said no to Saudi, he's not going to go to Barcelona. They can't afford it. In the Premier League, if in some weird occurrence, Haaland does leave City for Madrid, there's a few rumours about that. Maybe he goes to City. Liverpool, if they cash in on Salah, maybe. I just think after we've pipped Man City to Declan Rice, summer just gone, why should we not back ourselves to go for these big names when they're available?
Well, I think... I heard that, you know, Real Madrid signed that guy, Endrick. He's like this youngster, and he came in and he did that really annoying thing where he goes, I'm really looking forward to playing with Rodrigo and Vinicius and Mbappe. So I'm thinking, well, as soon as he said that, I was like, he's been told that Mbappe's coming. Yeah, it's just one of those. He's going to end up at Real Madrid. It's a foregone conclusion, isn't it?
The thing is there are extra factors which could see him come to Arsenal. He was a massive fan of Thierry Henry. You can see it on the way he's modelled his game. You know, if he came in, Eddie would have to give that shirt up.
There's no conversation with Eddie. I think as soon as he sees his car pulling up, he's taking off that 14.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm having your car parking space as well, mate. Come on, get out of here. In fact, I like your jacket. I like your shoes, Eddie.
Yeah.
we're not having a go at Ed. But no, in general, I do get where you're coming from in terms of he's... I think you're being a little bit kind of down on Ivan Toney and the impact he could have. Because of the facts that you've rightly laid out, but also Matt pointed about the availability issues and the fact that at this point there are no surprises. It's constant injuries. We know what it's about. And for all that Gabby Jesus offers going forward, linking play, he is profligate in front of goal, in a lot of situations. He goes through spells of good finishing, then another spell of... you know, not being able to hit the target. So I think that Ivan Toney, at the very least, will raise our floor rather than our ceiling. It means that if Ivan Toney's coming in, we've got another option, a dangerous option, and it gives Arteta a different way of playing in different situations.
Yeah, it definitely raises the floor. And I mean, for me, I think what Ivan Toney would be were he to come in would be a kind of an Eddie upgrade.
Yeah.
In the sense, bear in mind, I think Eddie started 11 Premier League games for us so far this season. He's played an awful lot of football. And again, not to kick Eddie, but it is an area you can improve, because I think he's only scored 3 Premier League goals in that game. Is it 4 Premier League goals he's got so far this season?
He got 3 in one game. So I think he's got 5 or 6. Game, yeah. But that was like, that, I mean, those don't count, do they?
United at home. It did feel a bit Carabao with that game, didn't it? For me, that's what Toney gives us. And we've also seen this season against Manchester City, no less, that Arteta's not reluctant to put Jesus in a wide position and then fill someone else through the middle if we're missing Saka. And I think that would make us all feel a lot better, is the idea of Jesus playing wide if Saka's not available, if Martinelli's not available, and then having, you know, if it's Toney through the middle, great.
And he played that game against City as well, didn't he, on the right? Gabby Jesus.
That's what I say. Yeah,
it wasn't,
exactly.
It wasn't like a nothing game where we were testing him out.
Man, he was excellent. He was really good in that game. And I think the thing now, we know that we want another winger. This is we went so hard for Mudryk last winter. I saw an interview the other day where Arteta was saying, you know, that was something we wanted last year. There wasn't something for us in the summer. It's still something we need to do. I think when you're at the level Arsenal are at now, in terms of, I think we're the bookies have got us fourth favourites for the Champions League. We're top of the Premier League. We're at a point now, it's very different to 3 years ago. 3 years ago, we were a Europa League team trying to get in the Champions League. When you're at that level, there's a lot of players you can target who do make you better. Mm. Now, you've got to remember, I think Martinelli's had a bit of an off-season this year. He also got 15 Premier League goals from a wide position last year, which there's not many players in Europe that can do that. And so the pool of players that can improve you is so small that I think you have to be really opportunistic. And I think you have to look around Europe and go, okay, we want a winger. Who could you actually say could come in as a winger and do what Jesus did against City when Saka sat down? It's a short list of players. So I think you might be right that you have to say to yourself, you know what, if Ivan Toney's available, and that means that we can play Jesus as a wide player sometimes as well, that move makes a lot of sense. My fear with it is he's not played football in 8 months. Yeah. That's my biggest fear with the Ivan Toney thing is he's not played football in an awful long time. I think he was banned from training for a few months as well. So I think you have to have a bit of a concern. I also just don't get all the rumours are about a loan. I have no idea.
When I think make the money work. It's to make the money work, though. It's the same way we had with Devon. Because if we give them the money for Raya, they will know that we're good for it. And at the end of the day,
we've got a good credit rating. We've got a good credit rating with Brentford.
A good line with them, yeah, absolutely. Throw a TV in there while you're at it. And the thing is I think for Brentford, they will be interested in earning that money. Because, as you say, Ivan Toney's been out a long while. Right now, they might get 80 million for him. If he comes back stinking the place up, how much does he get then? So they're probably, you know, they might be trying to play our bargain, but I think that, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush with Toney, and that's why I see them being able to do it if we're obliged to buy him in the summer.
I saw something yesterday that was interesting. Obviously, Eddie, look, we're not gonna hate on Eddie, but he is a homegrown player. So everything we get, if we sell him, is pure profit. So it's not amortized over 5 years. It's just all there. But that sheer amount of money allows you to just make so many moves. It's why Chelsea tried to sell all their grads, basically, because it suddenly just like gives you leverage over the... So if we sold Eddie, it's no problem signing £100 billion player.
Because you could kind of say you pay 30 now with the money you get from Eddie. Say you got 30 from him, and that means you could pay, you know, another 30 next year, another 30 the year after. My only concern with moving Eddie, I mean, there is a part of me that thinks, is it easier? It never happens. You know, it happens a lot in Italy, but it doesn't happen here. But do you just do a swap for Toney, a sort of loan swap? Because they're going to need a player now. They don't have Mbeumo. If we're doing some kind of obligation to buy, they're not going to have any cash from us to buy a striker. They're going to need a striker. My fear with Eddie is he's on 100 grand a week, and the clubs that are going to be looking at buying him, they don't hand that out very regularly, and they're going to have to be really certain that he's their sort of flagship number nine. They're going to have to be really certain that he's going to be the main man for them, because they're going to have to put him on a big contract.
But I'd imagine that's what Ivan Toney's on right now. I can't be sure. Let me just double check. But I'm pretty sure. That's Ivan Toney.
Eddie is going to get you 10 Premier League goals a season for anyone in the league. He's an England international. That was great for us, for him to get that call up for that one game.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like, Eddie for Ivan Toney is like at Christmas when you buy your partner something amazing for Christmas. You get something, like you buy them something amazing and then you get something really shit back. Like it wouldn't feel good. It'd be like, wait, what? We just gave... Eddie, we got Eddie and you got Ivan Toney. Like,
He's saying that.
I bet he's on less, isn't he? I bet he's on less.
Have a guess how much that the reports are saying.
45,000.
21 grand a week.
What? That okay.
And that's several different sites, all from this year, saying that he's only 20 grand a week. Open a new contract talks about maybe going up to 55.
No wonder he's gambling so much.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
can't make ends meet with that amount, can he? 20 grand a week.
No.
Excuse me. Right, shall we move on to...
Yeah.
We know that Mikel Arteta, it's a time to rejoice, a time to celebrate. The new era is 4 years old. There's been a fair amount on social media just praising him, looking back at the whole era. What have you guys made? What do you guys make of looking back at Arteta since he's come in and how we've progressed? Go to you, Jacob.
It's that, I don't know if you guys have this. It's that weird thing when you look back at the last 4 years and it feels like about 20 years because of all the lockdowns and all the weird stuff that happened during that. You know, I look back, I mean, he's done that Obama thing, Arteta, where he's aged about two decades in the space of a four-year tenure at the club. But it's just mad to look back. I saw some of the compilations that went around of like his early games and the lineups we were putting out and, you know, Sokratis playing as the third man in a back three and Mkhitaryan's around. It's mad how far we've come. And I think the funny thing I found with Arteta, I was doing a YouTube show at the weekend with fans of other teams, and they were trying to give me stick going, oh, well, has Emery not proven that he's as good as Arteta now? Has Emery not proven you should have given him more time? You go, no, of course he fucking hasn't. Like, he's done a decent job at Aston Villa, but we're top of the league. I don't think Arteta gets his credit from opposition fans because I don't think they really realise how much it felt that Arsenal were on the slide when Arteta came in. I think we were 10th in the league when he joined us. I was really scared back then. I was really, really worried about where we might go. Don Raul was in charge. We were handing out contracts to aging players. I was genuinely worried we might do a Leeds. I was worried we might end up going really far down and even dropping out the league if we carried on that trajectory. Because you've got to remember, there was times it didn't look like we could beat teams. Like, we, you know, there was nothing coming through. I remember at one point thinking, there's probably about four players that I want to keep in this squad. And we were in such disarray. And he's changed the squad. He's changed the trajectory. He's, you know, given so many chances to young players. I see so many people giving him shit for not giving chances to young players. It's like, we've got a whole generation of young players that have come through under Arteta. I think he's completely transformed the club. And I do get a bit scared thinking about where we might be if we hadn't have got him in.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt, Jacob is terrified just a few days before Christmas at the thought of Arteta not being here. What are you saying with regards to Arteta and his tenure?
So obviously my first reaction is just to go 10 out of 10, love Mikel Arteta, no one I want more, all of that sort of stuff. And that's like quite how I feel. But there's a couple of things that, as we're judging 4 years, it's quite interesting how, and this is not a discredit because we're in an amazing place and he's got us there. But there were moments in this 4 year journey where we were totally lost. And I thought it was quite interesting. I listened to the Tuesday Club podcast. They sort of did one a week or two ago. And it was quite nice because it was like, he's obviously done it and he's completely turned it around. But there was a period where, and really until the start of last season, where there were still doubts. There were still doubts about the journey we're on, maybe less internally. But, you know, that, the sort of the collapse, even when we like to when we were going to get fourth and then we didn't get fourth, you know, I thought that could be really, really bad for us. I thought, how, if we didn't get fourth, how are we going to come back? Because it didn't feel like it was all going to be there for us. But what he's done is he's just completely transformed the culture. I think that's the way he's done it. It's like this whole like non-negotiables thing that was a bit crazy at certain times and it felt weird because he was like falling out with players all the time and all of that sort of stuff. But when you look back on it, you realize, because that was the biggest problem with Arsenal, it wasn't talented players, it was just a lack of discipline. It was why when they were in the mood, we could go and smash a top team at home, but every time we went away, we'd lose 5-1. You know, do you remember all those Anfield 12 o'clocks, City, you know, 5-0 away at City? It just became normal, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing he's done. He's put the discipline back in the club. He's lifted the standards of the club. There was one part of me that was going, and again, this is not a criticism. It could have been so much better because, you know, we could have got fourth that year, you know, and then this could be our second year in the Champions
League. Would that have been better though? Or would that have?
Well, I think it would. I know, like we've with the benefit of hindsight, we've said we've changed the narrative and changed the journey. But yeah, it's better to win than not win. And last season, I think we should have won the league. We should have won the league. With the position we're in, you know, with the injuries we had, I know we had, that was, we had one injury. We had two injuries in the first, one injury in the first 11 for the final 10 games of the season, and we completely blew it. And again, that's not criticism because he's taken us on such a big journey, but, you know, that's the next step. And the next step, I think, is the hardest one because it's from going from, you know, nearly made it to, you know, champions for the first time in 20 years. And so if I was judging him, I think I was originally, oh, it's 10 out of 10. But I think it's 8 out of 10 because yeah. I think it took a while. And we and I still want, like, as an Arsenal fan, I still don't believe in the way we used to believe that we're going to go and win the league this year. That we can do it, because that run in, I mean, I was impossible to live with. That really freaked me out, what happened in those last 10 games. And then the moment the pressure was off, well, we would go up and beat Newcastle with Kibior at the back and Jorginho in midfield. It was psychological. And so the question is, have we erased that psychological shortfall this season?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'll mirror a little bit of what you're saying. Like, I was watching a little compilation on social media about Arteta's 4 years, and it was basically showing all the games, but it was basically showing all of our wins and our victories, winning Community Shields, winning FA Cups. And I will actually go as far as to say, I actually believe that if you don't show the down points, you are not fully appreciating what Arteta's done. Because I was certainly one of the bigger critics of Arteta at times. Let's be honest, we were completely lost at times. It felt like Arteta didn't know what was going on. And there is no question that for a novice manager, he has had to learn certain things on the job. There's no question about that. That happened. What gives me such encouragement, and the reason why I'm so happy with where he's at now, is because he has learned lessons. In the early days, it seemed like he was just indignant over doing the same thing over and over again. And now it feels like he is, like all great managers, we see it with Pep, Klopp, they try different things and they won't just go down through stubbornness. And Arteta has learned to adapt. I think you could argue he's as good an adapter as anyone nowadays. The other thing that I would say is what you were saying, Matt. There was a period where it almost felt like Mikel might be a bit unlikable. The way he was treating certain players, the way he was coming out, like he was bullish to the point of, you know, getting people's backs up. And I cannot overstate the importance, I believe, of that Amazon Prime documentary, The All or Nothing.
Yeah, great show.
Because it really humanised Arteta. It let everyone know. The fact is I could always back him if I felt like there was a plan in place, like, and he knew what he was doing. In terms of managing players, we got to see the issue with Aubameyang and how he left. I backed him at the time, to be fair, but watching how that played out, it gave you a greater understanding of his rationale, the way that he thought. And so since that point, I have never liked Arteta more than where I am now. I think he's amazing. He's absolutely a top, top manager. I think he's already shown that he will be. But of course, as Matt says, there's nothing to say that you are until you start winning big trophies. I think we're going to win the league this year. And I think this will be his announcement on the highest of stages that he is for real.
I think you can cut his tenure in half. I think the first 2 years and the second 2 years, and I think what you point out, Johnny, that moment that he got Aubameyang out the door, that coincided with a performance against Manchester City at the Emirates on New Year's Day. Do you remember that?
Yeah. That was where we suddenly all saw it. It was like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah. He also changed the system and the tactics a little bit. Before that, we've been playing Aubameyang wide left. He put Lacazette as the kind of false nine. And it feels like since then, we've been a completely different team.
Yeah.
Before that, you boys are right to say there were some crazy times. Yeah. Was it the start of that season that we lost three on the bounce?
Well, I think there was the start of that season we lost three on the bounce. But do you remember run into Christmas until we played, till Smith Rowe came in? Well, I think we lost 8 and 10.
Yeah.
It seems like Burnley coming to the Emirates, having their way with us and things. You know, I mean, I can't even remember all the teams, but relegation fodder. Turning up the Emirates, going, rubbing their hands, going, we've got this soft outfit today. And it was so predictable in how crazy it was. And at that point, you know, anyone, I think, would be forgiven for thinking, you know, he's lost hold of the rope.
So do you think he survived because we had an empty stadium? Like in retrospect, do you think that was actually a bit of a blessing? Do you think if there had been a full stadium, they might have turned on him?
I think there's a very good argument for that. Very good.
I do wonder, because that was obviously before the Amazon Prime doc as well. And you've got to remember, before that, he'd obviously fallen out with players that we really liked, like Aubameyang, like Ozil in many cases. Also, there was a lot of like rumours about, oh, you know, he doesn't like Martinelli, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And now, you know, you hear players like Martinelli couldn't speak any higher about him. But there were times within it where you're right. He seemed like a real kind of hardline guy. And you got to remember, back then, we were only sort of 3 years after Wenger, who was a very, very different style altogether. And I do wonder whether it would have been a bit different if we'd have had a full stadium.
I think it may well have been different. I think the one thing that you sort of hear from inside the club is everyone inside the club, like Mertesacker, Edu, all of those lot, all saw what he was trying to do. And I think, like, when you're, and he's clearly a genius. I mean, like, can be a crazy genius, but like, there's no doubt about it. And I think seeing that every day also helped a lot.
Can I make a prediction? And this is kind of a hot take ish as well. Obviously, all good things do come to an end eventually, and there will be a day when it ends with Arteta. I think when it does, it's going to end in absolute flames. Like, I think we're going to win trophies. I do, you know, at the stadium, we've got at London Colney, at the training ground, they've got those light up trophies. Have you seen that?
Put them in.
Yeah. I think we'll do that. I also think when it goes wrong, it's going to go really badly wrong. I think we're going to have glory with Arteta, and I think we've also changed. I think, you know, a few years ago, we were really in an era of big teams keeping managers for 2-3 years and then changing again. Whereas now, you know, Klopp's, what, 8 years at Liverpool? Pep's not far away at City. I think we'll probably get 10 out of Arteta. But I do think when it ends,
Premier League as well, right? Because it's where all the money is. It's where the best players come.
Managers are. And let's not look. The one thing that you could, when you say Klopp, you say Pep, you say Arteta, the one thing, the word that rings out before anything else, is competitor. They want to be the best. That is what they're about. And they, there's no point in going to some, you know, farmers league and they just whack out league titles every year. There's no point. They want to be going up against the best. And this is the first time, I'm not talking about legacy now, because we know that Pep, in my opinion, is outright on his own in terms of legacy. But right now, I genuinely believe we've got the best manager in the league. And I think he's going to show it this year. And that's the biggest compliment I could give him.
Would you take Pep Guardiola or Mikel Arteta today? Which one would you take?
I mean, you'd have to. There's lots of different parameters that come into that. Like, Pep would have to come in. Has he got his own players? Has it? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, legacy wise, there's no question that Arteta has a hell of a long way to go, if ever, to get to where Pep is. But I think there's a reason why Pep spoke the way that he did about him. He knows he's the real deal. And this is, Pep, I think, is looking around going, he's coming now. He's coming. Last year was a warning. This year, they're coming. I'm thinking like Game of Thrones, where the army start marching. You know what I mean? Like, our army is marching now. And listen, they're lighting smoke towers. Pep, King of the North, knows that we're coming now. And I think it's going to end in, to continue that thing, as Jacob said, it probably will end with Arteta doing a Daenerys Targaryen and just flaming the whole stadium down. If I can't have it, no one will. Yeah. So, fair enough.
Who would you take, Jacob?
I do have that slight fear that there's a voice in the back of my brain going, if you say that you would genuinely choose Arteta over Guardiola, this is going to get cut up and memed and there's going to be a million people on Twitter going, these fucking mad Arsenal fans, you know, Arteta's never won a major trophy and they're cheesing about. I think that if anyone's got questions over Guardiola, it's whether he can do it on the kind of budget that Arteta's done it with. And obviously, in more recent times, we've seen the Kroenke spend money and we've seen more expensive acquisitions come in. If you could swap managers with the Kroenkes spending money as they are doing now, buying £100 million Declan Rice's, you know, potentially spending loads of money on forwards, it's hard not to say that Pep Guardiola, as the best manager who I think has ever worked in the game, would bring us more success. I don't want to swap Mikel Arteta for anyone. because I truly, and I think the one thing we've got with Arteta, and it's something I really underestimated with him actually when he came in, is his connection to the club. He loves Arsenal. Like, he really, really loves Arsenal. And I love that he played alongside Mertesacker. They shared a captaincy and now they're running the club together. I love that Edu as well is an ex-Arsenal guy. Like, I don't know if we're ever, as fans, going to truly understand what that means inside the club. Because I think it means a lot. I really do. I think it means a lot to players as well when they join, that they can see that these guys love it here. Pep Guardiola's got no connection with Manchester City apart from the fact that they pay him once a month. That's I really like that. As you know, we get over romantic sometimes things as Arsenal fans, but I love that. I love that it's an ex-captain who manages us now.
Well, the one thing you'd say is it was the pinnacle of Arteta's playing career, playing for Arsenal. Mm. We were the big club he moved to. Yeah. So it kind of reinforces his perception of his playing career by building Arsenal back up to the great club. Because if we're, as you were alluding to, when we're all worried, are we going to be in relegation scraps? You know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, my greatest days were playing for Arsenal. Bottom of the Premier League. No, it serves an interest of, you know, kind of harnessing his own legacy by building Arsenal back up to the great heights.
And he's done it twice. You remember when he came in? You remember that last 8-2. Day of that transfer? 8-2. He came in after 8-2. There's twice that he's come in when this club has been on the floor and picked us back up. I like that. I like that.
So one thing that I urge everyone to read, because I've read it this morning just before this podcast, is there's an Athletic article today on Nicholas Jover. And I was expecting it to be all about like Nicholas Jover and his set pieces and all of that. And it is. But there's a couple of really interesting Mikel Arteta pieces. So what I didn't realise at Manchester City, because he was obviously at Manchester City, Mikel Arteta found him. So it was Mikel Arteta who went and was, and it was like he went back to Pep and said, I've seen this guy doing really interesting things. And that immediately, that's not like, oh, I'm just turning up to work at Man City and thinking about like coaching Raheem Sterling on how to be a better winger. It's, I'm literally scouting everything that's going on across Europe, who the backroom staff are. So he went to Pep, he said, this guy's doing some really interesting things at Brentford. And so, and there's a few things. One, Pep Guardiola says, well, let's bring him in. So immediately, that the level of trust to be like, okay, let's bring someone into our inner sanctum and do that. And then apparently Mikel Arteta left for Arsenal 6 months later. And Nicholas Jover's time at Man City was not that, like there was no real uplift in what they achieved. And apparently he instead of needed to leave. And he served his contract, but then he went. But then Mikel Arteta went back in for him and said, come, we'll create a role. We're going to make it work. All of that sort of stuff. Apparently he brokered the deal because their wives are both Argentinian. He took him to his villa in Spain. You're just like, the guy is, it's just incredible that we've got that. You know what I mean? It's like, you can't imagine Unai Emery, you know, scouring and going, I'm like putting these pieces together. He's like galaxy braining it. And so he brought him in. And they were just talking about like the way that we approach set pieces now is it's like a lab. It's like literally like a lab. It's like we've got different strategies for different teams. We've scored 3 more set piece goals than anyone else. Like, do you remember when every time we conceded a corner, it was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So I love the way that he's done that and has built this like literal lab of experts to come and help us.
I think that Nicholas Jover's inclusion into our management team is without a doubt a top 3 thing that Arteta has done since he's come in there. I cannot get over how important it seems the impact Jover has made. And you can see it because when you watch the players and they're constantly at set pieces looking over and he's very animated. He's not some guy who's just done my work in the week. I'll go and watch, you know, Netflix on the sidelines. He's at it. Every time there's a set piece, I'm coming into play. Do this, do that. But you can see how well drilled we are at set pieces. And the hallmarks of Arsenal before, you know, Arteta, certainly before Jover, is that particularly at set pieces, people looked like they didn't know what was going on. Mm. It was just weird. We didn't know we were doing zone. One week we were doing man. You got our best headers on the wrong people sometimes. They're not committing for the, you know, and let alone there was that period where, as you said, Matt, we could never seem to score from corners. It's like getting like one corner a year or something stupid like that. And you're just thinking, look at all our big boys and we're still struggling to score from set pieces. And Jova has changed that. But he is part of our defensive improvement because I can't remember the exact figure, but I think it's like a third of goals in the Premier League are from set pieces. And yet we've got the, you know, the most steadfast defence in those situations. So he has been an actual game changer. I think I cannot, you know, overstate how good he has been for us. And I think he is, yeah, you know, a massive, massive part of what Arteta is doing now.
That felt like a real Wenger vulnerability, didn't it? That really, yeah. It was like, oh my God, we always concede from set pieces. But it's one thing, you know, I don't want to make it about Arteta because we should be celebrating Jova, but it's one thing I really love about Arteta is that, you know, I think sometimes people confuse him as being arrogant. I really like the humility of going, you know what, I'm a new manager. I've not done this for decades. I'm going to get an expert to come in and help me with the set pieces. And like you're saying, Johnny, about the amount of times we score them, you see the players. When we score a set piece, you see they go to Jova. They go straight to Jova and like celebrate with him. And it's something, I think set pieces are a funny one where there's something you never appreciate when you're good at them. You only appreciate when you're bad at them. Do you know what I mean? You never see fans going, oh, well, yeah, we're a good set piece team. They always go, oh, yeah, we always get done by a corner. But we are a good set-piece team. And I've got to a point now when I'm sat in the Emirates and when we're playing against a low block and we're struggling to break someone down, you know, we go in at half-time and everyone's a bit quiet. And I do think we might just open them up with a corner. Like we might just open them up with a corner. Then they have to chase the game. I mean, this is something Arteta said the other day about how game state really changes the way we play football. And that's when you see our free-flowing stuff is when someone has to come at us a bit. And set-pieces open people up for us. And one thing that drives me mad is, it's similar to, you remember like 6 years ago when people first started playing out from the back? When you're at a game, everyone around you going, just hoof it. I feel like the modern equivalent of that now is when, like we see Saka and Martinelli taking those corners and Erdegaard sometimes. They're always super flat. So that you never loft it to the back post. It's super flat. Sometimes it doesn't beat the first man. It's because if it does beat the first man, it's so hard to defend. And you still get people going, how can you be a professional footballer and not beat the first man? It's like, mate, we're the fucking best in the league at this. Just trust what they're doing. I love it, man. And what you were saying about how we got Jova, about the Argentinian wives and going out to his villa, it reminds me of that story of how we got Zinchenko. Did you hear that they surprised him? They brought Gabby Jesus to his house. Like, I love that. It feels like, I know that we've left the Don Raul era, but it still feels a bit mafia, doesn't it? You know, it feels a bit, I love that.
And that was when, and you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Sol Campbell when, you know, they would like smuggle him in and they'd take him, like they'd all be there. It's like, when we're at our best, we are using every competitive advantage to get what we need for the football club. And I think that's, there's more confidence in it. You know, it's not like, oh, we can't get him because it's like, you know, it's that old, you know, and it's, I think it was, I don't know whether it was the Raul Sinelli, but I still like it. It was like, when Arsenal knock, it's a different kind of knock.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a great line. And I think, you know, we're continuing to do it.
It's a different kind of knocks. We've got about nine people knocking on the door. We've got wives, we've got ex-players, we've got ex-teammates. It's about 30 people trying to squeeze through your front door when we turn up.
Horse's head in the bed with them. Right, let's move on to League Cup regrets. We were talking just before we came on about the fact we didn't even realise there was a League Cup tie this week. There's another one today. And quite frankly, We all seem to be a bit over the moon about it. Jacob, how are you feeling about the fact we crashed out of the League Cup?
Delighted. Yep. Over the moon. You're watching Newcastle and Tottenham last night. Also, Newcastle looked knackered. I don't know if you watched the game. They've obviously got a lot of injuries, but they're so puffed out. But also, I thought last Sunday we looked tired as well. End of that game, Erdegaard and Rice specifically were on their knees, knackered. And you know, they run so much, but yeah, I think looking at this Anfield game at the weekend, which is going to be so difficult, and as we spoke about, our record there really isn't good. The last thing you want is another game in the week. And it also, by the way, there's this whole thing of, oh, congested Christmas fixtures. If you actually look at the next few weeks...
It's fine.
it's not that bad. Whisper it, but it's not that bad. It's because we're not in the League Cup. If we were doing a... It's still two legs, isn't it? The semi-finals of it in January.
Yeah.
Thank God we're not part of that, man. It's not... Because we've got quite a thin squad now. We've got five fit defenders. You know, as we say, we haven't really got another winger apart from Martinelli and Saka. I think the last thing we need is more Carabao football.
But Liverpool, I mean, like, it's a big game, Liverpool-West Ham at Anfield in the quarterfinals of the League Cup. They're going to have... And I was looking at their... I sort of flip-flop on Liverpool a little bit because they've obviously got this incredible spine of the team, and we'll get into that. They've got Alisson, they've got Trent, they've got Van Dijk, they've got Salah. And you're like, oh, well, that's a Champions League winning. They're Champions League winning players, Champions League winning quality players. But then you look around that and it's like, well, so you've got Joe Gomez, Simikas on the foot as a fullback. Like, there's a few average players in there. And so if they're already at that level, like, some of those players are going to have to play tonight. Like, you can't just play no one tonight. And I'm sure some of them will start on the bench. But, and then you've got West Ham, who are so up and down. It could be anything. It wouldn't surprise me if West Ham were 1-0 up at halftime.
We're a physical team as well, West Ham. I mean, they obviously knocked us out. And they looked good in that game, didn't they? They ran us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the key thing is at this stage of where we are in the process, we've got bigger fish to fry. The difference between West Ham, they don't have bigger fish to fry. This will be their best chance of winning a trophy this year. Obviously, they did brilliant in Europe last year, but it's going to be a taller task this year for them. The League Cup has to be seen as a realistic target for them. They will be going like these are cup finals away at Anfield. They can absolutely hurt Liverpool. And I also think about where Liverpool are in their quest to get back to the top. This is also one of those where it's like they could probably do the League Cup as well. You know, they've not won anything recently. You know, I mean, you know, not anything big. They're wanting to just keep putting trophies in the coffers so they can build up that, you know, that kind of confidence. So I think that this is a competition that where we're at, it just doesn't mean enough to us to sacrifice the resources. But for Liverpool, I don't see how they can play it too light. Against the West Ham team, who will be going all out for the victory.
And presumably we want a Liverpool win, because like a tough Liverpool win, because we want them to have those two-leg semi-final in January. We want them to have a final in March. We don't care whether they win it. It's fine. Yes, they'll get a bit of extra confidence, but we want more fixtures in their legs that can create problems for them. But presumably we also want West Ham to be 1-0 up on 75 minutes and having to bring on, you know, Mo Salah on 60 minutes to come and change the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think is there any chance they can do extra time tonight? Do they do that in these fixtures?
No, because yesterday it went to, oh my God, Kieran Trippier. Did you see?
Yeah. Is that a potential betting scandal? Is there something going on there? That was a bit weird.
I think he's just having one of the worst months of a Premier League football ever. Yeah, it's like he's been absolutely shocking. But it went straight to pens. Mm. So tonight, I think that's...
So I guess it'd be that again. But yeah, I think you just want it. I think we do want them staying in that competition, because we, after the weekend, you know, watching City drop points again, obviously Liverpool drop points, but I was like, this season's actually an opportunity now. It's a proper three-horse title race, but it's also this is a real opportunity. And I'd love to speak to Liverpool fans about this, because it feels for me, City maybe not being at it this season, I don't know if we're perfectly placed to take advantage of that. Do you know what I mean, Matt?
You said a three-horse race. You also said on the last pod we did that you thought Aston Villa would finish seventh.
I was really hoping people would have forgotten that.
If I knew how to, I would have clipped it and we would have played it, because that was not a good prediction. Or it's not looking like a good prediction. Are you going to double down on that? Or...
No.
But you're still not saying it's a four-horse race.
I tell you what, I had an eye on that Brentford game when they came back late in that. And I do remember us doing that under Emery, and I do remember the American stats nerds on Twitter going, you know, the underlying metrics don't look good, it's going to fall away. And so you never know with Emery. I'm not ready to say it's a four-horse race.
They were terrible against us.
Villa?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were. We battered them. Absolutely battered them, and it was just for poor finishing. It's just poor final ball, poor final action. The final pass wasn't right at times. The shooting wasn't great. That was the only thing, and I think that's been the only thing all season, to be honest with you. I think if we had 26-year-old, wing forwards rather than 22-year-old wing forwards, we'd be out quite a long way at the top of this league.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that we're not in the League Cup. I saw Chelsea get a win. It would be strange, wouldn't it, if they had the season they're having and somehow ended up with a trophy in the League Cup.
Yeah, they're such a weird team. And they're in such a weird space where their supporters have kind of been through so much in the last couple of years that they don't know. You can see they don't really know whether to turn on Poch or not. Yeah. There's nothing to suggest that what he's doing has been any better than Lampard. And yet they're so desperate for this to be the answer. They're sort of clutching at false idols so much that they're desperate for him. They still haven't turned on Mudryk yet. I mean, I think that was one of his better performances last night, maybe. But that's
he came on as a sub, I think. But yeah. But I mean, I think that's where what Arteta has done is thrown everyone, because it's like, and I think we talked about it. It's like as a different club, you look at that and you go, if we give them more time, does it mean it would get the Arteta effect, or are we just getting more years of shit?
And as rival fans, I think all of us are going, stick with Poch, stick with Ten Hag, new contract.
I think Poch is better than Ten Hag.
He's got the Premier League experience, hasn't he? I do think you look at Chelsea, you go, it is just a bit of a mess. And I think the big question there is recruitment, but let them win a trophy, absolutely fine. But yeah, delighted we're out of it. And it means we can actually focus on Saturday, which feels almost like the biggest game of the Premier League season so far. The Saturday before Christmas, the two teams at the top. It's terrifying, isn't it?
I wish it was at home.
Oh my word! Can you imagine?
Because I feel like if this was at home, the atmosphere would be incredible. It's 5:30 on a Saturday before Christmas. We're flying. But I feel like we've just got a little bit unlucky with the fact that the way the fixtures have fallen, it's away from home at Anfield on the 23rd of December. Everyone is going to be watching. I'm scared.
It is, Matt, but we have to do it at some point. And if not now, then when? Like, I think we're in a good moment. We've spoke about the fact they've played midweek. We haven't. They're going to start Tsimikas up against Saka. We can't really ask for much more than that. Yeah. Alex McAllister's not fit, so it's going to be Endo in midfield again. And I thought he was really poor against
United. He was terrible. You need Declan Rice to absolutely steamroller him.
Just go through him. I wasn't massively impressed with Szoboszlai against Man United either.
He had a bright start, and then I think everyone just sort of took their eye off the ball and talked about how great he was. Yeah. It was all that, like, why didn't we sign him? Why did we get Kai?
Exactly. And I think all that happened is he'd scored a bit of a wonder goal in Europe, I think it was, and then Havertz had been poor enough that we just sort of praised him by contrast. I don't really see much there that I'm worried about. I thought Nunes.
It's the atmosphere, and I know that just sounds so. It's so overdone, and the atmosphere isn't always great, but it's great when it matters for them.
They'll be pumped for this.
Again, it's like the worst time, 5:30 p.m. Everyone on a massive session the weekend before Christmas. Everyone's going to have 10 pints.
Maybe this is me just trying to see the positive in a bit. If you do this one, if you do Anfield on that Saturday at that time,
Then you're set.
Then you can go anywhere. You don't have to be worried about the Etihad. You don't have to worry about going to Old Trafford. I think we've got Old Trafford in April sort of time, haven't we? I know it's quite near the end of the season. We don't need to be scared of an away game if we do this.
Yeah.
And we've got everyone. Everyone's fit. Jesus, fit for once. Artie, apparently. I mean, Partey's back in training. I thought Smith Rowe made a couple of really good cameos in our last two games. At some point, you have to just do it. At some point, you have to go, you know what? We're ready. They're vulnerable. Let's go and set a marker down. And if we do it and we're top of the league at Christmas.
I think there was one Christmas game at Anfield. I think it was maybe the 23rd of December, I remember, from I think like 2001 or 2002 when Freddie Ljungberg scored a couple, or Henry, and Freddie got the winner. And I think we've just got to summon that spirit, you know, of just going there at Christmas and just a classic. I would love a classic 1-0 down, 2-1 up. Just get out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know.
Give me what we did in April, except we just don't throw it away this time. Oh. That's what I mean. I was watching the highlights of that back. Someone posted it on Twitter, and I was like, "Is that the last time that Martinelli managed to cross a ball from the left hand side? That ball that he played in for Jesus' header."
That game was really, it really put me in a spiral of depression for about. I mean, well, it was the beginning of April, and we didn't win a game in April, and yeah, I went from literally at 35 minutes in, we're 2-0 up. We were playing majestically.
We were unbelievable, wasn't it?
It was unreal what we were doing in that game. Not like for 5 minutes, for 35, 40 minutes. And then to let it slip through the fingers like that, it provides me with so much pain still.
And I think the real thing I remember from that game is I think it was their equaliser was Zinchenko getting nutmegged by Trent late in the game. And that's the one thing for me that I worry about with this game. So I'm a real Zinchenko defender, but something happens to him at 70 minutes. It's like midnight in Cinderella. Just something clicks, the spell's off and he's in trouble. And not having Tomiyasu to come in there, that frightens me. And I've got to be honest, I don't feel confident with Kivior yet.
Not with protecting a lead with 15 minutes to go at Anfield against Mo Salah.
That's
I don't mind him coming in for Martinelli and then giving us extra cover and maybe Martin Zinchenko going further forward or something like that.
Yeah, or even at centre back, even doing the kind of Rob Holding three at the back thing. I don't mind that. Coming at left back. I mean, I think, you know, not without wanting to go too tactical, I think one thing we will see, my prediction, if we are trying to hold on to a lead, is what we'll do is we'll take Havertz off, Partey will go six, Rice will go left eight.
I don't think Partey's fit.
Is he not at all? Definitely. No. I know he came back to training last week.
There was some noise, but I don't think he's... I think
if you can get Declan Rice onto that left-hand side and just say to him, keep an eye over your shoulder, don't let Trent go past you and try and help out where you
can. Or Jorginho, he could have a role.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's how you do it, is putting Rice out there, because that for me is the danger zone. So especially even against United, I thought Trent really grew into that game. And as it went on, he looked really good. But I feel good, mate. I don't think you can ask for better circumstances than what we've got. It's obviously going to be a terrifying atmosphere, but it stops being terrifying if you do this one. And as you said, we're not good going away in the Northwest, so it's time to spin that.
Who would you... what players of theirs would get in our team?
Alisson, for me, is the best keeper I've ever seen, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anyone better.
In this sort of like new era of goalkeepers, you know? Mm.
Trent, probably, ahead of White.
Yeah, I agree.
I think White's been a bit dodgy the last few weeks.
He doesn't like one-on-one defending. I think, well, that's where... But I feel like he's... Yeah, I mean, he was up against Mitoma, who's a bit of kryptonite for him.
He hates Mitoma, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's just like a very, very direct sort of running.
So I think you'd start Alisson, you'd have Trent. Van Dijk, back in form. Hard not to stick him in there, but you'd have to have him next to Saliba, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Would you say Zinchenko as the left back?
Well,
I'm not saying
Tsimikas.
No,
Andrew Robertson, if he was fit, I think
I might say, and much smaller sample size to go with, I think you could argue Timber if he's fit. I think the way he was looking and the way he played at Ajax last season, so. It's a hard one, left back. Yeah. Central midfield, Declan Rice every single day of the week.
There's no one from Liverpool that I want in midfield.
Do you not think any get into us?
No. I mean, who is there? There's like...
I think I agree with you.
There's nothing there. They need a six. That's their like weakness.
Yeah. Who do they play at eight? Obviously, Szoboszlai, we spoke about him. No,
there's nothing there.
No.
And then up top, I mean, it's... You've got to find a way to get Mo Salah in and just
could you say Salah one side, Saka the other?
Yeah, I think that's what you got to try and do, haven't you?
And then listen, as I said at the start of the podcast, I don't think they've got a better nine than Jesus, especially for the way that they play. Actually, for their thing that they did when they had Firmino between Mane and Salah which I think is quite similar to what we do with Martinelli and Saka. I think it's Jesus, man. I watched Darwin Núñez last week with his touch like a trampoline. I cannot believe they spent that money on that guy. And he's coming out of the team a lot. Gakpo's dropped to the bench recently now.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of options in the forward line. I don't know if they've got the same quality.
Yeah. No, when they come on, they're like, we'll bring Cody Gakpo on. You're not like, oh no, you know that. We're bringing on Firmino. Oh my God, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Not yet. I mean, obviously, Jota's good. Luis Diaz has kind of gone off the boil a bit.
He has gone off the boil, yeah.
I think you could say that Saka, Jesus and Salah.
Yeah, so they get in.
He's balanced, isn't it? I mean, look.
It's not like a combined Tottenham 11 where you're like, son.
Exactly. There's definitely four players that get in there in Alisson, Salah, Trent and Van Dijk.
Yeah.
Maybe say Robertson, but no, I think that's
interesting that we consider them to be weak defensively, but three of their defenders getting into a back five.
Well, yeah, I guess with Trent, you say he's getting in there for not doing much defending.
Yeah, he's just like offensively.
He's just such an incredible footballer. But
yeah, I mean, how he's not playing for England regularly. I mean, he's playing a little bit in midfield now, but
yeah,
it's unreal.
Yeah,
unreal.
It's odd. I mean, look, after the summer, I think there'll be a new manager and we'll see what happens there then.
All right. Predictions. After your last lot, I'm surprised we're even doing this section.
I'm waiting for the Mbappe stuff as well. Come the summer when he's announced as a Real Madrid player, Villa finishing
seventh and... And Mbappe's coming to Arsenal. We're trying to pretend we're a serious podcast.
Look, you got a comedian on in the week. It's got to be silly. 2-1 the weekend. I believe in us. I think we can do it. 2-1.
The really, really, really annoying thing about this is you've got me excited about it, about the chance of a win. And normally I'm a little bit conservative on my predictions. You know, just... But today, I'm going to go 2-1 Arsenal as well.
Yeah. Did you watch the Man United game, right? The United Liverpool game.
That's helped. That really has helped.
Great.
Because and the Fulham game where they were down with 5 minutes to go, and that United game, you're watching it and you're like you can see how a goal could happen, but it's like it's really offensively, it's basically Mo Salah. That's it. If you shut him down, I think him and Trent. Yeah. If you shut them down, I just don't see. That Man United were not good. I mean, they were resolute, but they weren't good. It was like Scott McTominay, like bossing midfield. And so you just look at that because it's easy to go. When I saw the Fulham game, it's like, yeah, but it's a different Anfield when they're playing top teams. But they hate Man United more than they hate us.
Oh, definitely. To them, that's the biggest fixture in their calendar. After the fact they're going to play tonight, I believe, man. And I honestly, if we do it, I mean, would you take a draw if I offered you a 1-1 draw?
Well, I think it's one of those weird ones, right? Because I think you've got to take it because it's early on in the season. It's a week before Christmas. It's just like, I think you probably do take that away from home. And then you've got to try and beat them at home. However, we drew 2-2 with them last season and it felt like, a massive defeat. It felt like we'd lost 7-2.
Yeah, it did.
And so I think it depends on the manner of the draw. Like if both teams play well and it's a 1-1 and it's like, oh, that what a cracking game of football or a 2-2 week before Christmas and everyone's like two teams going for it, then I think that's fine. What we can't have is like a repeat.
No.
Like, where it's like you're 2-0 up. If we're 2-0 down, then a 2-2 could feel great, but we can't have it.
Yeah.
What happened? Because it literally was like I was walking up the street after that, going like my head was going, that was okay result, but my heart was like, we just lost the league.
Yeah. I think that was the moment. I think
it was the moment.
You've got to bear in mind how unbearable all of us will be on Christmas Day around our families if this happens. I mean, I was just checking the table as we were talking there when I was thinking, would I take a draw? The reason I wouldn't take a draw is because if we draw with Liverpool and Villa win their game, I'm not sure who they're playing.
Well, they're playing on Friday night, so if they win on Friday night, they're top of the league at Christmas.
They're top of the league at Christmas. After I predicted they finished seventh, I can't have it, man. I can't have it. I've got to roll the dice.
Yeah, no, well, they're going to be top of the... I mean, they're playing Sheffield United at home. I mean, that's as guaranteed a 3 points as you can get. So, and then if there's no winner in Liverpool, Arsenal, Villa are top of the league at Christmas. I actually... There's a strange part of me that thinks it... Like, I don't want to be top of the league. I want to be top of the league at Christmas, but there's always that stat. They're like, they keep talking about it for like two weeks. Where it's like, top of the league at Christmas, teams who haven't gone on and won the league. And we've done it. We've been top at Christmas like three or four times without winning the league.
Not won the league, yeah.
So I feel like I'd rather just like slot in behind Villa at Christmas.
Well, if there's anyone you want to slot behind, it's Villa. Do you know what I mean? If there's anyone else who could be top of the league, I mean, apart from because of my prediction, but yeah.
No, exactly. Where are you going to watch it? Are you going to go out? Are you going to stay?
Yeah, I've got a great one. Me and all my schoolmates, every year we meet up for like a sort of pub crawl and a curry just before Christmas. So we've got that. So we've got like a table in a pub booked.
The ground in Islington?
No, up the road in Stevenage where I grew up. Right. Yeah, but it'll still be good. How about yourself? Where are you?
I'm going to be back in London. So I'm going to go and get some mates together and watch the game. But it's like that, you know, when it's you're in two minds, you're like, do I want to watch it with a big group of mates and Arsenal fans, or do I want to be in like a
in front of a television where
like in a smaller
safe
like,
space
in a safe space. Yeah, I don't want to fall apart if it all goes wrong, you know.
No, but I'm going to be going home early. Trust me, I won't be arriving for the curry. I'll be taking a takeaway home if we lose.
Because it'll be 5 days of misery if we lose that game, and it will just like all the old doubts will come out. But
yeah,
let's be positive. We're both saying 2-1 win. We both think we're going to do it. We both think we have to do it. Let's definitely not lose. But yeah, well, that was a good little one, wasn't it?
Yeah, great to find, mate. Thanks for having me again. And I had a couple of messages after the last one as well. So thank you to everyone who did that. I hope you have a good Christmas.
Yeah, no, thank you. And we'll be back with some more stuff in the new year. Let me find this outro loop. Here we go.
Podcast Network.